the Baltimore Sun, I'm Dan Roderick, Sun columnist, and this is episode 452 of the Roughly Speaking podcast. Today is a catch-up show. I thought it was time to catch up with Habitat for Humanity of the Chesapeake because, well, I wondered just how many houses that nonprofit has been able to provide people who could otherwise not afford one. It's a busy organization established in the early 1980s with a focus on converting vacant houses to homes in Baltimore City. By now, Chesapeake Habitat has renovated or built 750 homes in the city, but also Baltimore County, Howard County, and Anne Arundel County. So we're going to get in a car and take a tour of two of Habitat's city locations, and we're going to do that with CEO Mike Posco. He's at the wheel. We're going to do that right after this message.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
I'm with Mike Posco, who is CEO of Chesapeake Habitat for Humanity. We're in Mike's car. It's raining. We're on McCabe Avenue, just off of York Road, Govan's area. This is Woodburn McCabe neighborhood, row house neighborhood. And Habitat did some work here starting a few years ago, right, Mike?
This street had 60% vacants, and our first purchase was 21 properties through the city's Vacants to Values program. Some of those properties we turned into green space because the houses were just in such poor shape. We've since completed 18 and settled 18 homes in here. Yeah, so we've had 18 homeowners, new homeowners in here over the last 3 years. They get a zero interest 30-year mortgage. So we don't give away the houses. A lot of people sometimes think we do. And we have 7 houses under construction. And we're actually working with the city to get a couple more to keep the progress going here. When we first started in this neighborhood, the banks kind of said they thought that the appraised value was going to go for about $100,000. It was costing us more than that to gut and rehab them. So we just did 4. When we did those 4, the appraised value came back at $118,000. So we moved the mark just by doing 4 houses.
And which 4 are they? Are they right here where we're parked?
Yeah, so any house you see with these white railings are Habitat homes. This one here, 810, these 2 corner houses, and this over here on the opposite side of the street were the first 4 that we completed.
This one here, no, actually this is one.
Yeah, so that is not one of ours, but this is an example of now that we've done enough work in here, other builders are coming in and people are starting to put money into their own houses.
The white railings are Habitat homes, and then there's one that someone else is fixing up, and then there's an abandoned house.
That's correct. Yeah.
How are the folks who lived here? Have they been receptive to Habitat coming in?
Absolutely. So when we first got here, there was a very small community association. We would have actually more Habitat employees showing up at the community meetings than they had from the community. So since then, in partnership with York Road Partnership, Loyola, the community association here now has a president. They've actually gotten together and made other changes. So there was a street up here that a little girl was hit on, and part of that was because people were flying through this street, so they were able to get these speed bumps put in. They were able to get a stop sign put in up the top of the hill. So I think that's an example of once we're in a neighborhood and we can actually help revitalize that neighborhood, all of a sudden people are taking care of cutting their grass, not cleaning up the alleys, because people tend to find a vacant neighborhood and they'll dump stuff in the alleys. And now that it's policed and monitored by the community association, it makes a world of difference.
So I understand these came through Vacants to Value, the city's program for vacant homes, but was there a particular reason why you like this neighborhood to work in?
Yeah, I think part of it is partnership. So Councilman Henry had come to us and talked to us about it. The city certainly wanted us to come into here. Again, there wasn't much of a community association, but we also felt there were strong institutions that surround the community, such as Loyola, York Road Partnership. So we want to partner ourselves in communities that have other resources, and we're not the only ones doing the work. It will make the community turnover quicker from a revitalization standpoint and just make it that much stronger.
Also, it's not the standard Baltimore row house either. There's a setback on each home, steps up, maybe a flight of 8 or 10 steps up, a little front yard, and I don't know what they look like behind, but there must be a small yard in the back, right?
Yeah, there's small yards in the back, and if at all possible, we will put parking in the back, a parking pad, to try to eliminate some of the parking on the street. You can see up in certain areas, there's a big park behind a lot of this string of row homes that we worked with the city to add more park space and just make it more of a place that you can live, work, and play.
I remember when community groups came in here together to work on that park, spruce it up and paint those barriers over there. What's the deal with folks who end up being the owner of these homes? It's not just you walk up and we put you in the home. There's a little sweat equity involved, right?
Right. So a homeowner has to first be between 30 and 80% of the area median income. They have to have their debt cleaned up. So if they have a lot of debt, we will have them work with consumer counseling credit services. Then if they meet that, they will have to have a means to pay a mortgage, but the mortgage is a zero interest mortgage. So typically what we're finding is 50% of the nation's population is actually paying more than they should for their housing. And about 30% of those are paying over 50% of their income towards housing. So we make sure that our homeowners will only pay 30% of their income towards housing. So a typical homeowner for us might be a single mom with two children, maybe paying, $1,100 or $1,200 in rent. When they go through our program, their mortgage payment might be $600. That gives them more expendable cash to put into after-school programs.
That's huge.
And, what it really does is it stabilizes that family. And there's studies that the Federal Reserve Bank did and Indiana University did that say that a child that grows up under home ownership as opposed to rental has a 30% greater chance of graduating high school. The teenage pregnancy rate goes down. So the overall health of the child tends to get better because they're not having to move from place to place, and hopefully their parents not paying more than 30% of their income towards housing.
And as the years go by, do you find that most people just remain in their homes, or do they move on to other properties?
So we've done over 750 homes. Over 150 of those individuals have paid their mortgages off, which they're in better shape than I am because I still have a mortgage payment. We do tend to see that they stay in the house, or it transfers in the house from the parents to the children. And part of that is it's a zero interest mortgage, so that's hard to beat unless their income went up considerably and they want to move to another neighborhood. But having them either pay it off or build that equity up in that house, and they tend to maintain the house themselves now that they own it, as opposed to if they're in a rental property that the landlord's not taking care of it very well.
I've assumed all these years that Habitat takes volunteers to work on these properties. Former President Jimmy Carter, probably the most famous one. That's still part of the model, right?
Absolutely. So we engage with about 3,000 volunteers a year. We use volunteers on the properties on anything that that we can, that one's going to maintain the quality of the construction. But the trades, such as plumbing, electric, HVAC, we put a EPDM rubber roof on. That's done by a trade, not by by volunteers. Any structural framing is done by carpenters, although we have started a workforce program called Habacor.
That's Habacor Workforce Development, a fairly new program that offers training in the construction trades during the building of a new house or during one of Chesapeake Habitat's rehab projects. It was after the civil unrest of Baltimore's Freddie Gray Spring, April 2015, that the idea for Habacor developed.
About 3 years ago, we went to the state to pilot this program. once the riots happened, we realized we have this great resource of all these houses under construction that we could train individuals in the trade industry, which are having a shortage of trained labor. So we work with different nonprofits that have already done soft skills training. So an example is there's a program called Jumpstart. And Jumpstart takes those individuals for 3 months, two nights a week, and they give them basic trade skills. Then they try to find them jobs. For the ones they can't find jobs, we will interview them, see if they're eligible for our program. They'll come to us for 10 months and work 5 days a week. They get $11 an hour. They get health benefits. When they graduate from our program, Jumpstart then finds them a job in the construction industry. The first year we were 80%, had an 80% success rate. We had a cohort of 10 individuals and 8 of them got jobs. The second year, the same thing. This year looks like all 10 are going to make it through and graduate through the program. So we're trying to look for ways to kind of ramp that program up so that we can add value to the houses we're building, but also get more people job trained in the trade industry.
Before we leave Woodburn McCabe, you said you have 7 under construction. Is there more you'd like to do here? Because it looks like there are more properties that could use some loving.
Yes, so we work with the city and the community to try to acquire any of the vacants that are here. We're in touch with now smaller builders who are also looking to work now in this neighborhood, because now they're starting to see the numbers work, because the houses now are, some of them are appraising for 124, 130. And so now that appraised value is going up, a regular market rate builder can make it work for them. So if that starts to happen, yeah, it makes our job that much easier and we can move on to other neighborhoods.
Sweat equity, I was interested to learn that the people who are going to live in the homes got to do a little work.
Absolutely. So if they meet the other requirements, the financial requirements, they agree to go into a partnership with Habitat where they give back, if they're single, 250 hours of sweat equity. If it's a couple, it's 300 hours of sweat equity. That sweat equity includes 50 hours of financial literacy and home buyer education training that we provide. So it's classroom training. It's all about budgeting to make sure you're paying your mortgage and how to deal with any tax incentives that there might be. And then home buyer education to change your air filters. How do you, if something goes wrong with your furnace, how do you maintain it and things like that?
How to reignite the pilot in your water heater?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because if you don't and you have to have a plumber come out, that can cost you $150.
Right. And then another 50 of those hours can you should call me. I have good leads to plumbers.
Yeah. No, I have a good plumber. It's just that I couldn't figure out how to restart it. So I should have gone through your class. See?
Yeah, there you go. So another 50 hours of the 250 can be friends and family. So we encourage the homeowner to bring out relatives and friends to volunteer and help them get their hours in. And then the remaining 150, they have to do themselves. And that can be in on the job site. That can be in one of our retail businesses called the Restore. It could be going to community meetings. We want them to be part of the community. So we encourage that.
When people work on site, come out to the construction site, what do they do?
So they can do some framing as long as it's not structural. So we may have them putting up walls. We have usually a ratio of one superintendent or supervisor to every 5 volunteers. We let them hang drywall, but we need a finisher, because drywall is just an art, and it's not something we would want our volunteers to be doing. They can help put in flooring. They can help put in insulation. They can help put in trim work. They do landscaping work. So it's quite a bit. The gamut covers the gamut. So
when it's all done and you're finally giving someone the keys to the home, that must be the peak of your job, right?
That part is amazing, especially from some of the stories you hear. So, for instance, in April, we'll be hopefully doing a dedication for a homeowner that was homeless for several years. He got back on his feet, and he is now somebody that helps other individuals with drug rehab and alcohol rehab. And he's been going through our program, and it's an amazing story. So absolutely, when somebody gets their keys, it brings a lot of tears to people's eyes because it's the first time sometimes that they're the first homeowner in their family.
We'll continue our tour with Mike Posco, the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of the Chesapeake, and see the 30 homes it built in a large development called Orchard Ridge off Sinclair Lane in Northeast Baltimore after these messages.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
Hey listeners, during the run of the 2019 Maryland General Assembly session, you can get updates on news from Annapolis on the Roughly Speaking Government Edition. Sun reporter Luke Broadwater and Malia Cromer, director of the Goucher Poll at Goucher College, are teaming up to file reports. So be listening for the Government Edition of Roughly Speaking each week until the end of the Maryland legislative session.
Several years ago, we merged with Habitat Anne Arundel County, where we've done work in Brooklyn Park, Hanover area, Annapolis. We also merged with the Howard County affiliate. And so now our footprint covers Anne Arundel County, Howard County, Baltimore County, and Baltimore City. About 4 years ago, we merged with the Sandtown Habitat, which is over in West Baltimore. And in that community alone, they did about 300 plus homes over the years. So over the course of all those mergers and how long the affiliates have been in place, it's been about 35 years.
What's your opinion of vacance to value? I mean, I know you have to work with the city to get these homes. So do you think that program moves fast enough? Do you think it's an efficient program overall? Do you think the city could be pushing more properties out for redevelopment?
Yeah, I think they use up all the money every year. So it is a valuable program to small developers. It's certainly a value to us because the homeowner is the one that's getting a $10,000 break that can be applied to settlement cost and closing cost. So I think it is a really valuable program, and we would love to see it to be continued. And I think the fact that it can help smaller developers out is also a big, huge plus.
So it sounds like you think if they had more money, they could do more properties. That's the hang up. I know there are legal issues, too, and just in the city taking properties, right?
Yeah, so if they have to go through the legal process, it's time consuming. They usually have an attorney working on it, and that can take several months. And what they're usually trying to do is people who've either left these houses abandoned, either are no longer around, or they live in another city and they're waiting for the neighborhood to turn over and try to sell it for more. But the problem is, because they're not maintaining the property, people will dump trash on it, the windows get busted in, and next thing you know, there's leaks in the back of the wall, and then the roof starts to collapse, and then that just continues to deteriorate over time.
Do you think if you had even more funding, you would be doing more properties? Are you working at what seems to be the optimum pace now? Because there's still so many properties that could be redeveloped.
Yeah, absolutely. Money is the driver. People ask me a lot of times, what keeps me up at night? It's money, because you're a lot of your funds are dependent upon either government funding, foundation funding, individual funding, corporations. We've been very fortunate that we have a great relationship with the state of Maryland and their housing department and Baltimore City's housing department. We partner together quite often, and we want to be in the neighborhoods that the city wants us to be working in and the state wants us to be working in, as well as, you know, that community. So it all kind of goes hand in hand. We can't do it by ourselves, but to your point, yes, more money put into affordable housing is only going to have us be able to get over that hump. And I do think that the state and the city are trying to find ways of funding those, but it is a challenge.
Seems like it always falls to the nonprofits, though, right? The nonprofits will do affordable housing. Some private developers will do it if the incentives are right, and the city is supposed to have more incentive available for that. But it does seem to fall to the nonprofits to get things going. Like what you were saying before about Woodburn McCabe, now you start seeing private investors come in and fix up houses, but you guys had to get in there first.
Absolutely. So our goal is, as we're moving forward now, we're looking at new neighborhoods. We're actually trying to partner with developers that will want to go into that neighborhood at the same time so that we're not having to go in there, you know, 3 and 4 years beforehand to kind of start to stabilize the neighborhood. If we can partner ourselves with somebody that's going to do it the same time, we can turn that neighborhood over much quicker. So we are trying to work towards that as a new model.
So now we're in Northeast Baltimore. We came in off of Sinclair Lane near Archbishop Curley High School to what, until a few years ago, was a public housing project.
Yeah, I think they were called Claremont Towers, and it was public housing that they dropped those buildings several years ago. And then a partnership with Baltimore City and Penrose Properties, they started this community. And we ended up getting 30 properties in here to do new construction.
Let me just describe what we're looking at. This very colorful townhouses, I would say. It's very suburban looking. It looks like a suburban development that you might see in Howard County or Frederick County, Harford County. And they're very colorful. Some of the buildings, the houses are red, different colors, sort of pastel colors, and there's a lot of them here.
Oh, absolutely. Several hundred. You got Curley High School right here, which is a well-maintained, beautiful school, and the properties are well-maintained.
How did you get involved in this project? Because this looks like this is mostly private development.
It's private development, but I think it started as a HUD project, so there was probably some HUD funding involved with Penrose doing some rental in here, and then Penrose Properties, I believe, did some home ownership, but wanted some other folks to come in and do home ownership. So that's where we came in and took 30 properties and put 30 new homeowners in here.
Did you have 30 vacant lots?
We had 30 vacant lots, and we built them with volunteers and with trade labor. And, yeah, it was a great project for us.
Are they all together, the 30 all together? Are they in this row that we're looking at here?
Yeah, so this is a strip of them here, and then around the corner. So this, basically this northern corner that butts up against Curley High School were all of our properties.
And how has this worked out?
This was a great partnership and a great community. You can see that, you know, it's well-maintained. There's senior housing right around the corner. There's a police substation.
Is that the senior housing down there, the taller building?
Yeah, we'll drive right down there and look at it. But, and there's a police substation in that senior housing. So the crime level's relatively low in here. So
can I just say something? This development is eye-popping for me. We're in Baltimore City. It does look like we're in Western Howard County or Frederick County somewhere, this kind of development. But they are not that different, actually, when you think about it, from Woodburn McCabe. Setbacks, a little front lawn, attached homes, right?
Yep.
With a walk-up in the front. Just that the colors are sort of this mauve and beige and okra and burnt orange and red and maroon. And it's kind of amazing. Lots of white trim.
Yeah, so right to our right, we're looking at a much larger building with that's got senior housing in it. And as you can see in the bottom, there's the Orchard Ridge Police Substation.
Just have never been here before. And so Habitat had a good piece in this. Now, are the people who live here, are they mostly homeowners, or is there a mixture of homeownership and rental?
A mixture of homeownership and rental.
Yeah. And what about Habitat? They're all homeowners?
Yeah, Habitat doesn't do rentals.
We don't do any rentals.
No, we do all homeownership. Absolutely.
Well, this is an impressive place. If you're up off of Sinclair Lane, just drive in here and you'll be kind of amazed at what has happened to what used to be public housing. How big this was. Yeah. Now, as we're coming out toward the end here, there's a roundabout. Looks like some more housing lots here.
Yeah, so these haven't been developed yet. So we're talking to Penrose and the city about using these lots for Habitat homes.
What you end up with is probably a mixture of incomes out here, right?
Yeah, that's true, is that because you have mixed rental, these housing prices will probably appraise for around 140 or 150. They'll still get tax credits, but it really is a mixed income community.
What's been the most rewarding moment? What was the moment when you felt like, geez, I'm glad I do this job? I'm pretty happy being CEO of this organization, even with all the stresses about money and everything. But you're always thinking about the next deal. But
right.
Was there a particular moment in the last 7 years as CEO that you look back on and say, yeah, that's I felt pretty good about that?
We had a gentleman in our first cohort of the Habicor program who I would have guessed would not have made it through the program. And he has not only made it through the program, he was hired by a construction firm in D.C., and he just got promoted, and he's only been graduated out of the program, you know, two years ago, but he just got promoted to managing all the other workforce people, so.
Let me ask you something. Why did you think that individual wouldn't make it?
He had come to us and said he had a learning disability, and there were times where, you know, just some simple math things on the job site just weren't clicking. And then I think with patience of our supervisors, it just started to click for him. And then once it did, you see this a change in them because they have self-worth and they feel good about themselves and they're adding value. Not only are they learning a trade, but having them be part of the Habitat model where they are giving back to the community and helping somebody get a home is huge. So the next big thing for me will be if one of our Habicor folks become a homeowner, and I think we're close to that.
Mike Posco is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Chesapeake. More information about that organization in the notes with today's show. I'm Dan Rodericks. For my trusty and skilled producers, Steve Early and Hallie Miller, thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking and for supporting the Baltimore Sun.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.